to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, May 23rd, Memorial Day weekend. If you're driving around, going out of town, listening to us in your car tonight as you travel, don't let us raise your blood pressure too high. Just remember to breathe. It'll be okay. We're still going to be here tomorrow. We hope. Welcome back to the show. Playing musical chairs with the hosts this evening, Keith Alexander, who is with us for that phenomenal first hour with Edmund Connolly, has gone and has been replaced with Winston Smith, who will be my co-pilot for the next 2 hours of tonight's Odyssey. Winston, how are you, my friend?
I am so doggone good, James. I've had a great time at church today. We had a big big cookout for the community there, and I was operating the grill and had a good time reciting Shakespeare while I cooked weenies, and a good time was had by all. Now I'm glad to be in the pilot house of the CSS cesspool.
And CSS it is. That is, of course, in reference to the Confederacy, which we celebrate year-round, not just in Confederate History Month. But good to have you, Winston. Thank you for spelling Keith as he heads home to spend time with his family this Memorial Day weekend. Of course, Bill Rowland out of town. Eddie the Bombardier Miller about to go out of town. Eddie's actually going to New York, and he's going to be sending us pictures to post on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. When he's up in New York, he has a hotel in Times Square. He's going up there with his family. He's going to be wearing a David Duke for U.S. Senate shirt one day and a political cesspool shirt the other day, and he's going to take pictures in Times Square decked out in that. So that ought to be good. I'm sure he'll be well received.
Eddie certainly is a man of subtlety.
I think it'll go over well. I went over so well in New York when I was up there, so, you know, for CNN.
But you were wearing a suit.
Yeah, I was wearing a suit. I guess that's the slight difference there, but we'll see how that goes. You know, I tell you, we practice what we preach in the cesspool, that's for sure. Speaking of, and I know we've got some affiliates in Utah that are coming online for our second and third hour, as they do each week. If you missed tonight's first hour of the Political Cesspool, I highly encourage you to revisit it by accessing the broadcast archive brought to you by Liberty News Radio, by going to thepoliticalcesspool.org. We had an absolutely riveting conversation about the harmful and negative effects of modern-day movies as they originate from Jewish-dominated Hollywood. If you missed that, you got to check it out. Keith Alexander was, of course, hosting with me as we interviewed Edmund Connolly on the topic, the contributor for Occidental Quarterly. He is an expert on cinema arts. He was discussing films, and you got to see it or listen to it. I don't guess you can see it. We're not television. It's radio, not television. But you got to hear it. And in doing so, while visiting our website, be sure to check out Connolly's article on the visual displacement of white people in the media. He even mentions and praises the political cesspool in this article, but that's not why we want you to read it. We want you to read it because it is an excellent discussion and a fine supplement to the media's war on white people, which is, of course, what we were discussing during that first hour. So anyway, redundancy aside, check that out, the first hour of the broadcast archives. Did you get to catch it, Winston, on your drive out to the studio tonight?
I caught the last part of it, and I want the people to know that they get to listen to Keith Alexander for an hour every week. I get to sit down and have lunch with the man for a couple of hours every week, and then we go for a long drive. You know, when you go to lunch with Keith Alexander, you can be sure of a couple of things. First of all, you're going to go on a long drive to someplace very strange. And then you're also going to get a bunch of stuff to read. Keith Alexander is a walking encyclopedia of information. It's always my great privilege to sit down to lunch with him. And it's a great honor to be a co-host with him.
Yeah, I know. You know, Keith's a phenomenal talent, not in just hosting a radio program. Of course, Keith is a correspondent on this program. He doesn't have the availability to be a regular co-host, along with, of course, you, Winston, and Eddie and Bill. But we are lucky and fortunate to have a man of Keith's intellectual prowess join us each week for at least a half-hour segment, of course, because he was a big fan of Connolly's writings. He was on for the full first hour tonight. But whether we get him for 30 minutes or an hour each week, it's always a great time to be had, and it's even more fun in person. You know, we just really have a great team here. I mean, the Political Cesspool has a great team of on-air talent and production staff and the team at Liberty News Radio and the local team here in Memphis at WLRM. I mean, we've really cultivated something fine, and it's because we work with the best, and we take what we've got and get it out to the audience. It's well-received, but you can't say enough about Keith Alexander. And you can't say enough about his tours of Memphis that he gives to all of the guests. You know, 9 times out of 10 when we have someone on the radio program, they call in rather than come into Memphis to do an in-studio interview. But when the occasion permits and we have a guest such as Tomislav Sunik or David Duke or some of these other people over the years who have actually been in Memphis to do the show live in the studio, Keith always takes the time to give them a good tour of Memphis. And you just never know how that's going to turn out, do you, Winston?
You don't. You might end up at a graveyard. You might end up at in a mausoleum at the graveyard. You might end up in a part of town where white people are not welcome, looking at some house where some person was shot. It's a very gothic thing to drive around with Keith Alexander.
Well, you know, no matter where you're at, though.
Driving around Memphis with Keith Alexander is an odd experience.
You go everywhere. You go to the banks of the Mississippi River. You go to Nathan Bedford Forest Park. You go Sun Studios. You go everywhere. But you learn everywhere you go. I mean, he's got something to say that's just absolutely engrossing. I don't see how the man's head isn't as big as a watermelon with all that knowledge. Where does he store it? I mean, we're pretty smart, but where does he store that?
I don't know, but that's why he is the great attorney that he is.
And the intellectual great white shark that he is.
Exactly. That's what we call him.
Anyway, enough bragging on Keith. I'm sure he's blushing as he drives home tonight listening to us on the radio. Coming up later on in the show, before we sign off tonight and enjoy the holiday weekend ourselves, we're going to be joined by Clint Lacy. Now, Clint Lacy, this show, as we always tell you, we've interviewed some of the biggest names in American politics, elected officials, movie stars, inductees to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you name it, they've been on the show. Big names, but we also like to take the time to interview people like Clint Lacy who are really making, and in some cases, a bigger difference and a more positive impact than some of these household names that we've had on the show over the years. Clint Lacy is a gentleman who has ran for local office and won. He is an alderman in the city of Marble Hill, Missouri. Now, we always complain about the problems on this show. I know people have to be informed. They have to understand what the problems are before they can make the right decision to take proactive measures. But so oftentimes people become immersed and inundated with all of the negative stuff that's out there, and they throw up their hands and surrender. We need to be doing something, whatever we can, everything that we can, to turn this thing around, whether it's hosting a radio show like we've been giving the blessed opportunity to do. Everyone can make some sort of an impact, or at least die trying. And one of the ways you can is run for local office. Now, Clint Lacy, this guy is a hardcore conservative, a paleo-conservative of our make and model. He is a Confederate. He runs a very pro-South blog, and he ran for and won local office. So we're going to ask him the secret of his success later on in the show. How did he do it, and how can other people follow his example? We need people running for these local offices, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we're not going to be elected president, and it's going to be hard to win major public office. But that's not where, by and large, the real immediate impact is made in your life. It's made primarily on the local levels, and you can win those offices. We're going to find out how when Clint Lacy joins us a little later on in the show. So stay tuned for that. That being said, Winston, where should we start tonight? Of course, in between the guests that we have each week, we've got to make sense of some of the headlines that are manifesting themselves in the daily newspapers, and we've got a lot of them tonight. Where should we go first?
Fortunately, the American society has given us much with which to work this week. I say we take a trip to Dallas. How about Dallas?
You want to start in Dallas?
Let's start in Dallas.
We'll start in Dallas and work our way back to Memphis, because even Memphis is in the national news this week. And as you might expect, it's bad news. I mean, what do you expect? We're going to cover it all. We might even go overseas. You don't know where we're going to go in the political cesspool. We cover it all without retreat, surrender, or apology. But unfortunately, we're going to have to begin our coverage of the news and our take on the headlines after this next commercial break and a word from our sponsors. Sit tight, everybody. James Edwards and Winston Smith now in the co-hosting chair for the rest of the program tonight. We're going to be back with more, much more, in fact, right after this on the Political Cesspool Radio program.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Now diving into the topics of the week, some of the headlines that really piqued our interest over the course of the last 7 days. Winston, you said you wanted to start in Texas, so to Dallas we go. I'll give you an example. In New Jersey, for instance, when minorities don't pass the firefighters promotion exam, they simply just call the test racist and throw out everyone's scores. But in Dallas, however, concerns about racial diversity means that everyone passes. Here's the story, and I read directly from the article itself, and you can read along as well at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Of course, we document all of the topics that we infuse on the programs with references and sources on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Anyway, a procedural foul-up led city officials to give passing grades to every Dallas firefighter who took a recent promotional civil service exam. The mistake means some applicants who might have flunked the test could ultimately be promoted to the rank of lieutenant. Civil service officials said they couldn't recall such a glitch occurring before. When the firefighters, about 150 of them, gathered to take the test on May 5th, that was my anniversary, city officials weren't able to put together a required panel that's used to establish a comparative baseline for what's a passing grade. Initially, city officials said, the panel was too small. And when a larger one was hastily assembled, it wasn't racially diverse enough. Quote, the decision was made that the best thing to do was just to pass everybody, said Patricia Marsolis, director of the Civil Service Department in Dallas. You know, Winston, I guess that's really great news for the people of Dallas. They can sleep well at night knowing that the people running the Dallas Fire Department may not be competent, but at least they'll be racially diverse. And after all, isn't that all that matters? What do you think, Winston?
Well, of course that's all that matters. If you don't give a rip about public safety, if all you care about is keeping the NAACP from boycotting you, if all you care about is keeping Al Sharpton out of your backyard, yeah, that's the right thing to do. But if you want the public to be safe, if you want people to not burn to death in buildings that are on fire, you have a test. You have a test, and you see who is smart enough to handle it. And, of course, in the New Jersey case, they're saying that, you know, a fire doesn't care who passed the test as long as you're big and strong and you can get the job done. Well, that's just not always true. If you get some lame brain in there who was an affirmative action hire and a political correctness advancement, and he gets in there, he may not have the wherewithal to make decisions when decisions need to be made, hard decisions, decisions of life and death. Tests have traditionally been used to weed out people who can't make those kinds of decisions, who don't have the knowledge. And I don't know about you, James, but I am vitally interested in the Supreme Court's ruling in the New Jersey case. But this Dallas case is absolute madness. It is absolute madness. Somebody there should file a lawsuit because they are putting Dallas at risk.
Well, you're absolutely right, Winston. I couldn't have said it better myself. This is a prime example of political correctness essentially becoming quite dangerous. I mean, in this case, political correctness could, in fact, lead to the death of the citizens of Dallas. And just to recap what we just explained, in case you didn't follow, 150 firefighters just took a test, or firefighter recruits just took a test, and because the panel that grades these tests to determine whether or not the firefighter can indeed serve in the line of duty or can in fact be promoted, because the panel of judges that grade these tests wasn't diverse enough, they just passed everyone. Whether they passed, failed, competent, incompetent, they passed them all because there wasn't enough black graders on this panel that was reviewing the test. I mean, you know, absolutely people could die from this, no doubt about it.
You start putting public safety at risk in order to keep Al Sharpton out of your town. That is so reprehensible. The people who made this decision need to be called to the carpet. They need to be held to account because this is just a dangerous decision to make. It's a dangerous way to go about things. And the blood, they need to decide if the blood that is going to be on their hands is worth the good PR they're getting out of it.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, certainly they figure that, well, you know, what's a couple of lives if it saves us from having to be scrutinized by the media? You know, one of these minorities that isn't suited to be a fireman, if he had flunked his test that happened to be graded by a white grader, he would have sued the city, sued the fire department, so on and so forth. Al Sharpton would have come down, and the media would have backed his every play. And I'm sure that Dallas says, you know, the price to pay there doesn't compare with the price we'd pay if a couple of people die in these fires. That's what they're saying. But, you know, Al Sharpton isn't that tough. What happened when he came to Memphis, Winston?
We chased him out.
We did it quite well. And we won the day. I mean, but, you know, that's what you can do if you're just committed to engaging in the battle. If you will report to the front lines and defend what's right, you can win. Unfortunately, once again, people just don't want to fight. This is what we were talking about in the first hour with Edmund Connolly. I mean, people would rather just not complain about these, you know, these terrible movies and everything that they stand for, then take a righteous stand and run the risk of actually winning.
Oh, you're right, James. Going back to taking on Al Sharpton and his ilk, you know, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County is handling Al Sharpton the way he needs to be handled. Al Sharpton has threatened to go to Sheriff Joe's district there and protest his treatment of illegal aliens. And the sheriff simply wrote him a letter and said, I dare you. I dare you. Come on down here. You do not understand. You do not understand how our government works, and you don't understand how law enforcement works. Come down here. I'll show you how it works. We'll sit down and talk about it. And, of course, Al is not going to get anywhere near Sheriff Joe Arpaio, because he'll be ripped to shreds.
Well, this is the thing about it, Winston. I mean, as we say again, it's the elephant being afraid of the mouse. Look what happened to Sheriff Joe. I mean, this guy has like 100% support down there of the citizenry. He's absolutely untouchable. Look at Judge Roy Moore. Now, yes, he took a righteous stand. That was the justice in Alabama. He took a righteous stand on the Ten Commandments, and in the short run, he lost his judicial appointment. But in the long run, he is probably going to be elected the next governor of Alabama. In more cases than not, and this show is another example. I mean, we have taken righteous stands, and here we are being mentioned just about every week in national or international publications, and we're all the stronger for it. People are so afraid that the media is going to come down on them. But if and when they do, you normally come out in better position than when you were before. And I think that's certainly true for people like Judge Roy Moore and Sheriff Joe Arpaio. The specter or the fear is greater than the actual outcome, because the actual outcome is going to be favorable.
The specter of what can happen in Dallas as a result of this ridiculous decision to just pass everybody many of whom are probably incompetent, that specter, I mean, that's not just mere shadow. That's real threat. That is real threat, and the people in Dallas need to take it seriously, They need to correct this. This is not the way to protect the public safety.
Yeah, well, obviously you're right. This is a real threat, and this is something that has to be addressed. But what we're saying is the people there are afraid of doing the right thing, and there's nothing to be afraid of, these people who judge these tests. We got to go. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Winston Smith in the cesspool with you tonight. We were talking just before the break about a rather serious manifestation of political correctness in Dallas that could eventually end up costing people their lives. I want to move on from that to a more trivial example of, man, debauchery, I guess is the word I'm looking for, in Texas. We'll stay in Texas for a couple of more minutes, and then we're going to move on to Maine. We're going to make a nationwide tour of the cesspool headlines tonight. You're really going to want to hear this story out of Maine, folks, so stay tuned for that. I mean, if nothing else, you got to admit this show is entertaining. But anyway, while we're still in Texas, you know, Winston, I didn't think that it would be possible to find a mayor that could be more embarrassing than our very own Memphis mayor, Dr. W.W. Willie Harrington Hamilton Joe Franken Reynolds. This guy is he's about as much of a doctor as my dog to begin with, but he really is the personification of a corrupt black mayor. I mean, this guy's walking corruption, Willie Harrington. So I say again,
you're looking at a dictionary under corrupt politicians, you're going to see either Ray Nagin or Willie Harrington.
You got it. All right, so that gives people a perspective if they are tuned in from a place other than Memphis. Of course, if you're local, you know what we're talking about. And this guy's been in power since like the mid-40s. But anyway, I didn't think I could ever find an example of a mayor that would be more of an embarrassment to his city than Memphis's Willie Harrington. But I found one, Winston, and we wrote about it on our blog. His name is J.W. Lown, L-O-W-N. He is the mayor of the metropolis of San Angelo, Texas. Now, he had just been elected to his fourth term in a landslide victory a few weeks ago, but he abruptly resigned. And he tendered his resignation from Mexico. So why did he do it? Why did this mayor, four-term mayor of San Angelo, Texas, not to be confused with San Antonio, why did he resign? Well, because he had moved down to Mexico to be with his illegal alien gay lover. Here's the story. J.W. Lown has left his position as mayor of San Angelo to pursue a personal relationship. Lown said in a telephone call late Wednesday afternoon from Mexico that he has started a relationship with someone who does not have legal status in the United States. Lown said he did not want to take the oath of office knowing that he was, quote, aiding and assisting someone who was not a citizen, end quote. I made the final decision when I knew it was the right decision to make for me and my partner and our future and for the community, he said. The mayor declined to identify the person by saying he didn't want to give his name. Lown was scheduled to take the oath of office Tuesday for his fourth term as mayor of San Angelo, but did not appear at the event. Lown said that his lover, the man who is his lover, came to the United States 5 years ago. He attended Angelo State University. How can illegal aliens even go to college, Winston? That's one. But he said the relationship started sometime back.
It's easier for illegal aliens to go to college than it is for your typical American white kid to go to college.
Well, that being the fact, apparently, Lown and this man are in Mexico awaiting a visa to come back legally. this is the world in which we live in the year 2009, I guess. And this guy's probably going to get some sort of an award, some sort of a humanitarian civil rights award, while Miss California continues to be demonized by the American media. Your take on this story, Winston?
I guess we could call it the case of Brokeback City Hall. I wonder if this guy is going to be on the list of potential Supreme Court justices since Barack Hussein Obama is looking for some kind of queer mestizo, and preferably a lesbian mestizo to fill the vacancy left by David Souter. But, you know, James, I say good for San Angelo. They got rid of a fag and an illegal alien all in one shot. I mean, that's efficiency.
I'll tell you, if everyone was that efficient, we might turn this thing around. I guess you got a point there, but nevertheless, I mean, this is, I guess, becoming more and more commonplace. This is the type of people that represent us in public office. But this isn't nothing compared to the story in Maine, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that after the next break. But before we go to that, another headline, I guess, that's making the rounds right now. Winston, did you see that apparently they found the missing link, that now we not only evolved from monkeys but also from lizards? Did you catch that one?
Yeah, I saw that. And folks, if you haven't seen it, they think they found a skeleton. I think it was 2 years ago, or they've been studying it for 2 years. And it's got this creature that they're saying is related to a lemur. You know, a lemur. It's a really neat-looking creature. But this skeleton has this long tail. It has a squatty, compressed skull, and they're saying, hey, this is your 47-million-year-old grandmother. And they named it Ida after one of the daughters of the researchers, but they are honestly looking at this thing, and they are seeing a human being.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these guys, and they say they've been studying this for 2 years, to make sure they were right in their assessment that this was, in fact, the precursor to humans. I mean, you know, these are scientists. I mean, am I missing something here? I mean, am I just a dumb hick or what, Winston? I mean, am I the backwoods country boy for looking at this lizard and saying, you know, that really don't add up?
I don't think you're off the mark at all, James. I think most people are looking at this, scratching their heads, and the people who are agreeing with it are the ones who would have, you know, they would have looked at. I don't know, they look on a Rorschach test and see the missing link. this has got to be a joke. It has got to be a joke, because if you look at that skeleton, it is nothing. It resembles a human being in no way whatsoever. Now, I've always been leery of scientists and archaeologists who make these kinds of pronouncements. I remember when I was in college, we used to get National Geographic magazine. And on the cover of one issue of National Geographic, they had this sculpture of a really odd-looking creature. It was like half bird, half lizard. It was a crazy-looking thing. And they got this sculpture because they found some fossils. They found an imprint, right? They didn't find bones. They found an imprint. And they asked an artist to construct a sculpture of what this creature would look like, and that's what they came up with. And I looked at the imprint from which this sculpture worked, and I said, you know, there are just too many bones there. There's something wrong with this. And a few months later, National Geographic issued this really, really teeny, teeny correction way in the back of one issue of the magazine, and they showed that picture, and they showed that sculpture and said, oh, we made a mistake. This was actually an imprint made by two corpses, one on top of the other.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, you know, again, it just goes to show that people will believe everything except the truth when the truth is, in fact, politically incorrect. But I'll tell you, the truth is exactly what they get on the political cesspool every week. But, yeah, you know, I had to bring that up, get your take on it, because I saw that. And, you know, of course, I laughed. I guess most thinking people did laugh when they saw that. But the thing about it was, you know, there's since been reports that this lizard, that the missing link, was registered by Acorn to vote for Barack Obama last year. and did, in fact, vote for him.
It probably contributed a lot of money, too.
So, I mean, so there you have it. But, I don't know. I thought that was a great. And that passes as legitimate international news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're the kooks though. If you ask them, we're the ones that you can't trust. But you know, by God, this lizard was in fact our distant. I don't even know if it's a distant cousin. It's a first cousin, right?
Whatever it is, it's ridiculous. It ain't related to me. It ain't related to you. It might be related to Morris D's, but
I knew that was going to come up. That had to come up at some point. But all right. Anyway, missing link, we debunked that one. Where else you want to go, Winston? Where should we go now?
I would like to go to Montana, if you don't mind, James. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but I would like to go to Montana.
All right, what's going on in Montana? I don't have any notes on Montana this week. I thought they were going to stay out of the cesspool this week.
There's a small town in Montana. The name of the town is Hardin, H-A-R-D-I-N. And in this town of Hardin, Montana, they have this detention facility. It's a jail. It's called the Two Rivers Detention Facility, and they built it. It's a state-of-the-art private jail. It's capable of holding 464 inmates. And they built this thing in the hopes that it would provide employment for over 100 residences there in Hardin, Montana.
All right. Hold that thought right there. We're going to go back to Hardin, Montana. I know where you're going with this because I've heard this story before. But it should certainly be revisited in the cesspool this evening. So we're going to stay in Montana before traveling over to Maine when the political cesspool returns right after this commercial break from our sponsors.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Like rock stars, we're making a cross-country tour of the headlines. Our latest venue is Hardin, Montana. Winston, continue on with the story from Hardin.
Well, James, the basics of this story are that the people of Hardin, Montana, built this prison facility, and there's nobody to put in there, probably because there aren't a lot of black people in Montana. Anyhow, they need to do something with this facility in order to make some money off of it. They spent a lot of money building it, and they need to recoup the $27 million or so that they pumped into it. Well, they have found a possible solution. They want the Guantanamo Bay detainees moved to their facility, okay?
So the inmates from Guantanamo are going to Montana.
it could be exclusively for these Guantanamo Bay detainees. Now, on the surface, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't even sound good on the surface. I mean, you're moving a bunch of probable terrorists onto American soil. But, James, here's what will happen with that if it occurs. If they start moving these detainees to Hardin, Montana. How many people in Hardin, Montana know how to support Muslim prisoners? Probably none. They're going to have people who know how to take care of Muslims in that area. They're going to have to bring in a mullah or an imam or somebody who can minister to these Muslims. And of course, that person is going to bring his family with him. They're going to need people to cook the special food for these Muslim prisoners. All right? They're going to have to bring in a whole group of Muslim support people. And, of course, it won't be long before that group of Muslim support people becomes a Muslim community. And then it won't be long after that before the people of Hardin, Montana have to build some minarets in which to blare out the calls to prayer five times a day for the Muslims. In other words, James, what will happen is Hardin, Montana will become a majority Muslim community.
And you'll have in Hardin, Montana, what you have in Paris. Well, I guess they'll start burning the streets of Hardin, and most boys born in Montana will have the name Muhammad. And that's exactly what's happening in Paris.
And it is. And the sad irony of what would happen in Hardin, Montana, is that they built that prison in order to provide employment for the local people, which happens to be white people. Because, let's face it, this is Montana. There aren't a lot of black people in Montana. So the jobs that the facility they built for white people to work at will become a job market for Muslims.
Well, never mind the fact that it's just a bad idea in general to bring dangerous criminals from a place like Guantanamo to a place as innocent as rural Montana, but that fact notwithstanding, could they not just train the white locals of Montana to, you know, serve the needs of these minorities?
Oh, no, that would never work, because what do white people know about Muslims? They don't even know how to handle the Quran properly. You hand your average American a copy of the Quran, and he's going to open it like a regular book. But that's not the way the Quran opens. It opens any other way. They read things backwards. Ironically enough, it's a backwards religion. But, James, they want to do this for the worst of all reasons, sheer economics. They want money. But in order to get that, they will eventually have to surrender their town to a Muslim community, because Muslims internationally will not abide a bunch of white Americans seeing to the needs of Muslims. They don't want white American Christians handling the Quran to pass out to these prisoners. They don't want white Americans cooking the food for these people. Because the white American may have cooked bacon that morning, and they don't want to get the bacon germs all over their pure Muslim food. These prisoners will have a whole host of needs that can be filled only by Muslims. And Hardin, Montana will have to import an entire Muslim community to take care of them. And, of course, Muslims, they breed like rabbits, and white people, they are refusing to procreate at all. It just will not take long before Hardin, Montana is a Muslim community, and the few white people who are remaining will be scratching their heads saying, where's my job?
Well, there you have it. And, you know, Winston, yeah, that's a sick story. What's more reprehensible is the fact that before tonight, there probably wasn't 10 people outside of Montana that had ever heard of this. And that's what's so criminal about things like this. That's why this show is here. And because we do address issues of importance like this, and you know as well as I, if you're not talking about these issues, if people don't understand and have knowledge of certain problems, they will never make the decision to become proactively involved in a resolution of such a problem. If they don't know about it, they can't act on it. And they won't know about it if they rely on the mainstream media, the establishment press, quote-unquote, for their daily bread. That's why shows like this are so important. That's why networks like Liberty News Radio are so important. And that's why every week, it seems, that the cesspool gets mentioned in the national media. We were talking about the international acclaim we've recently received from the London Times. Winston, of course, you were quoted in Newsweek magazine earlier this month. There's a reason that this show is getting equal footing with Limbaugh, Hannity, and Beck. It's because we've got something to say beyond the blowhard partisan bickering and silliness. And as we find out every week, it's, and I know I sent this email out today, but it's really remarkable that in the land of the free and the home of the brave, we lack so much of both here in America. But we're working on this program to fill that void. And of course, as we always make mention at least once per show, we do need your help. We've got a special incentive, in fact, for people who help now before the end of the month. For those willing to make a contribution to this program to help keep our work alive and growing, more importantly, we want to expand our reach, not merely survive. If you go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and make a donation before the end of the month, we're going to give you a copy of Craig Boddicker's DVD documentary, A Conversation About Race. And that is an incredible movie. Craig has been on this program twice to talk about it. And we're going to give that as our incentive to you, our gift to you, for helping this program continue to reach a massively growing audience of listeners around the world with messages such as the one we've been giving you tonight. I mean, people have got to know about stories like this. or nothing's going to be done to correct them. So before you get caught up with
on the Craig Barker DVD conversation about race, that is one of the most remarkable things I have ever seen. It's very simply produced. There's nothing fancy about it. There's no anger. There's no bluster. Just a white guy asking people about race and getting their honest, unvarnished thoughts on it. It's one of the most eye-opening things I've ever seen.
Well, if you've missed that interview, we've had Craig on twice. Go to our archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org and revisit those shows. I believe we had him on earlier. I know we had him on earlier this year. I believe it was around February, March, somewhere in that time frame. But, yeah, absolutely, Winston. I echo your sentiments wholeheartedly. And so, again, that's why we're offering the DVD to anyone who contributes to this program by the end of the month. We're going to give you that. That's our gift. And so before you get caught up in your tasks heading into Memorial Day, go to our website and make that contribution. You know, just imagine what it would mean to the future of our people in our country if only 5% of the people who are listening to Limbaugh and Hannity knew about our show and the truth that we're getting out there every week. But you can help make that happen because we are committed to making that happen, and we want to be able to count on you. So So go to thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight, maybe in the next commercial break, and show us your support. Send us an email. Join the email list. Send us a contribution. You'll get that great DVD. And we look forward to getting out as many of those as possible before the first of June.
Maybe I do. You'll stop twisting their arms so hard.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you got to do, Winston. You know. I'm not a salesman. What can I say? But I want people to get this DVD, and of course, it takes money to get them. nothing's for free in this world. But listen, anyway, don't forget, coming up, we're still going to go to Maine. I'm telling you, folks, the story of the night, and we've covered some ground tonight. We've had some good times so far. Edmund Connolly, what Winston and I have done the last hour. The story of the night, I think, comes from Maine. The most ridiculous story, I hate to use one of Bill O'Reilly's lines, but the most ridiculous item of the day is coming up at the top of the next hour after the burst of national news brought to you by LNR. We're going to go to Maine, and then we're going to go to Memphis. We're going to come full circle, come right back here to home to give you an absolutely unconscionable story from Memphis, Tennessee, and then we're going to go to our final guest of the evening in the third hour, Clint Lacey, local alderman in Marble Hill, Missouri. This is a man who shares our beliefs, who ran for and won elected office. He was accepted by the public with these beliefs, and he is going to let you know. And when I say these beliefs, what am I talking about? Conservative Christian beliefs, wholesome, healthy beliefs. He was accepted. He won. He's going to let us know how we can do it, too. And we're going to find out all that out in the third hour. Sit tight, everybody. We'll be back.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of The Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.